I'm C.M. Magaña from the Strange and Unusual podcast, a proud member of the Gunna Geek Network, just like the show you're listening to now. The opinions expressed are those of each individual host. Check out all the other podcasts at GunnaGeekNetwork.com and get ready because geekiness begins in 3, 2, 1.
You are listening to PopX Cast, where science fiction meets pop culture.
Captain's Log Supplemental.
PopX Cast.
Hasta la vista, baby.
And welcome everyone to PopX Cast, and we are joining an amazing crew already. We have Luke joining us over in the chat room. What's up, Luke? Welcome to episode number 28. If you're joining us right now on PopX.live, let us know. Come on and join the conversation. We would love to get to know you, and we got a really cool show for you tonight on episode 28. So it's going to be the bomb diggity. But hey, welcome to PopX. This is where science fiction meets pop culture, and I am your host, Joe Burke, Central Florida's seasoned comic book nerd and retro enthusiast. We'd like to welcome everyone right now joining us live in the PopX.live chat room, and also joining us at Geeks.live, our home network. We love you, GonnaGeekNetwork.com. Come hang out with us and join the conversation at PopXCast.com. What's up, Austin Burke?
What is up, Joe? I'm Austin Burke.
Stop. What is this beautiful thing beside you here?
Joe, I figured since, you know, podcasting is pretty important to us, I would get the proper equipment. Okay. The Wi-Fi is catching up eventually, so the lag will go away. But right now, we got a brand new microphone.
Well, there's no lag right now.
Do I sound better?
Oh, my God, dude. It's like gelatinous ooze coming forth of your vocal cords. It's like... Anyway, continue as I enjoy this beautiful microphone.
Joe, listen, man, right. I am so happy to be here with this brand new microphone. Hopefully I sound good, guys. Yeah. I'm your Appalachian geek at heart. If you missed last week's episode 27 where we reviewed the Suicide Squad movie, please be sure to head over now to Google Play or iTunes. Click that subscribe button to catch up. And while you're there, leave us a 5-star rating and review. We certainly appreciate it. Joe, it's so good to be back on PopX Cast.
Oh, dude, I know, and it's so awesome because PopX is just one of those shows where we can cover so much ground many episodes, and just like this week's episode, the top 10 franchise reboots that worked, and we were talking before the show, how cool would it be to do the top 10 franchise reboots that sucked?
We have so many.
We can dive into. But before we do that, we are going to cover this week's news. Stay tuned. The news roll now.
Extra, extra. Read all about it. This is PopX News coming to you live right here on PopXCast.com.
All right. I don't know why Mike puts the deaths at the very beginning of the show, but I understand the concept. You know, you want to get the worst part of the news over. We did get some sad news coming in this week in the Star Wars realm of things. Kenny Baker, who played R2-D2 in the original Star Wars trilogy and the prequel films as well, he has passed away at age 83, and he lived an amazing life, and his legacy will forever live on. I remember seeing the documentary of the old Star Wars trilogy and how he would take R2 and kind of bounce him, and he had to just kind of figure out R2's personality. Well, the personality behind that was Kenny Baker. And both Anthony Daniels and Mark Hamill did pay tribute this past week and to him on Twitter. And there's Anthony Daniels. Sad to hear Kenny's passing. One of the truly original cast, so famed for his iconic role as R2, he'll always be remembered by so many fans. And that's C-3PO right there. his sidekick, his partner in crime, Mark Hamill. Goodbye, Kenny Baker, a lifelong loyal friend. I loved his optimism and determination, and he was the droid I was looking for. And man, that's great. That is class. And
that's great.
But you know, it kind of makes me want to break out A New Hope and watch A New Hope and just honor Kenny Baker in that.
Such sad news, man. 2016, like we've said before, it seems like every couple of weeks we're covering.
It has sucked, dude. It's been the worst year.
Awful. It's been awful. But let's move on to some happy news. Let's talk about Wolverine. Actually, what am I talking about? This isn't happy. Wolverine 3 could be the end of the road for Patrick Stewart as Charles Xavier. This is not happy news. This is sad news.
Make it not so, number one.
Oh, my goodness. Well, you know what, though? Here's the thing. Yeah. They've said it before. Professor X died. Okay, and he came back. So there's always a chance, especially in a science fiction kind of film like Days of Future Past, you know, along that line, he could always come back. So even though he says he's not coming back, I'm going to hold out hope until the end of the series.
There's always, you know, and I think this has been coming for some time because with Hugh Jackman announcing that this is his final hurrah as Wolverine.
I think this is it for the old cast in general. I think this could be it for everybody.
I think you're honestly right. And I think they're literally with Wolverine 3, they are passing the virtual X-Men baton onto the new cast and the new crew. Yeah. And I watched X-Men Apocalypse. We did a full review over here on PopX, and I was really happy with everything about it. I mean, it wasn't the greatest. It wasn't the greatest film in the world, but it was awesome. Also in line, we have some really cool news. Now, we got all the crap out of the way. We got some cool stuff coming up. Superman 2, Man of Steel 2, is finally going to happen. Yeah. Warner Brothers Pictures and Movies has this slated and is showing the movie in a active development. So this is under Warner Brothers online production, and this is what it's listed as, in active development. So hopefully we're going to get a proper Man of Steel 2, a good companion to the first one, which I was a huge fan of the first movie. So it's going to be really cool to see what they do with this one, and maybe they might be a Justice League tie in. I don't know. So,
and really cool to see who they get as a director. I mean, who could direct? Possibly George Miller, maybe? That's my choice.
But Zack Snyder's out, though, isn't he? He's gone. DC's done with him.
After Justice League, he is gone. It'll be very interesting to see what happens. Mm-hmm. So Tom Hiddleston is officially returning to his role as Loki for Ragnarok. How exciting is that to see him back on screen?
Freaking love to Loki, man. You can't have Thor without Loki.
No.
I mean, it's like the yin and the yang, the good and the evil.
I think here's the thing about this movie, though. I kind of want to see him in more of a – because I loved his chemistry with Thor in the Dark World.
Right.
So I kind of want to see him as a companion to maybe Hulk and Thor throughout the movie as opposed to a full-fledged villain. So I think that could be an interesting route, but I don't know how they're going to go with this.
It's interesting that you mentioned that, too, because I was watching Thor Ragnarok not too long ago, and you know how at the ending – spoiler alert, if you've not seen it, you know, Loki takes on the persona of Odin. And it's like, okay, well, what happened to where's Anthony Hopkins? What's going on here, you know? So we don't know. And so
we don't know what's going on.
Hopefully there's a tie into there that kind of explains all that. So
All
right. So the CW has cast a Power Ranger, the star in the new film, as the very own Stargirl coming up in DC's Legends of Tomorrow. And Sarah Gray is going to be awesome. I think she's a rising star, definitely in the comic book genre. She has reprised the role as one of the Power Rangers in the upcoming movie. And so it's going to be really cool. And I'm actually probably going to go see the Power Rangers movie just because I was. I can't help it.
We have to, man.
I think it's going to be awesome, though, to see her in DC's Legends.
Dude, Stargirl, I was introduced to Stargirl through the Justice League animated show, and she's such a cool character,
man. She's going to bring a good dynamic to the show. I feel it. The Force is strong with this one.
The Force is also strong with Marvel, Joe.
Okay.
Let's talk about Marvel Comics. They will be relaunching Ghost Rider in November. Hints about the new comic series is rather than getting the Spirit of Vengeance fans will be getting something a little bit more sinister.
Whoa.
Hmm. So we gotta
now, I know that we're getting Ghost Rider on Marvel Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., but this is totally different, right?
This is a revamp of the character. It seems like they're going that route through the television and the comics. So they're trying to, I guess, give after the flops that the previous two Ghost Riders movies were, they're trying to give Ghost Rider a new image.
The first one's not so bad. The second one...
I don't think
one,
the first one's bad, but box office-wise, man, the second one just crashed and burned.
Spirit of Vengeance was definitely a turd. I'm just saying.
Can't save that movie, man.
can't save it.
Well, you know, I would like to see Netflix pick up Ghost Rider and do it justice. Because they can add... When you think about Netflix, I mean, they can add stuff that normal television and cable can't add.
Dark and gritty, man.
Dark and gritty, exactly. You think of Daredevil. You think of Jessica Jones.
Yeah.
And Orange is the New Black, and I can keep going and going. But anyway,
yeah.
Speaking of Netflix, this is a great segue. Netflix releases the first trailer this past week for Luke Cage. So we're not just getting a teaser. We're getting a look at that.
That's power. That was my favorite shot of the trailer.
He's got his armbands on, man, just like the comics, man.
That's so awesome.
So what I've taken from this is that we're actually going to see his origin story, and we may even see him in his old costume.
Oh.
Can you imagine?
Oh, man. Oh. What a nerd nugget that is. Oh, man.
Delicious. Gelatinous deliciousness right there.
Let's go from Netflix to video games. The most anticipated game, No Man's Sky, releases on PS4 on August 9th. Mm-hmm. With 18 quintillion planets, developers say that if discovering a planet every second, it would...
And Austin has lagged out.
Can you hear me?
Come on back in here, Austin. I'll finish up your... I'll finish it up. So there's 18 quintillion planets... And developers say that if discovering a planet every second, it would take 585 million years to discover them. So that's crazy. Here's Austin. He's coming back in right now. So, So if you can imagine 585 million years to discover all the planets, that's freaking crazy. So it would take this game a little time to finish is what we're trying to say. So I don't understand the concept behind this game, though. How can there be 18 quintillion planets in a game?
That's kind of I feel like that's an unrealistic concept. I feel like are they bluffing? Are they making this up?
I don't know.
A little outlandish. I don't know, man.
It's a little cray cray for the mind to kind of wrap it up.
Hey, it could be cool, though. It could be really cool.
All right, so moving on. For Fox expects that X-Men Legions to debut sometime during 2017 and 18 on the TV season. Now, we have talked about this about three or four episodes ago, that Fox was in development, because we know Fox is doing Gotham. And then we had the question, all right, so Fox is doing DC and Marvel Comics?
Yeah. Interesting.
In the same network?
Wow.
That's interesting.
I didn't think about that. Wow.
Yeah. So it's, it's really interesting because we're going to get X-Men in a television show, and that's going to be really interesting. And I hope it's not going to be like cheesy, teen campy stuff.
Oh, I hope not. Have you seen the trailer to this, Joe?
I have not.
Have you seen it? It looks pretty cool. I'm not going to lie. It looks pretty cool. Hopefully it can, because at the beginning I was kind of hooked on Gotham, and after a while I just kind of lost interest. But hopefully this show can capture that dark and grittiness.
You need
that
to catch up on Gotham, man. You need to catch
up. Has it gotten better? Yeah. I've heard it's gotten better.
When they introduced Mr. Freeze, Victor Freeze, it was amazing because they told his whole backstory about his wife and why he went the way he went and why he went down the dark path. Really
That's
interesting.
Cool.
And it shows the development of Edward Enigma going into the Riddler as well, which is really awesome.
And I loved his character in the beginning, like the first couple, you know, the first season. But yeah, man, I definitely have to jump back on board.
You need to.
Let's talk about some more DC.
Sure.
Executive producer of DC's Legends of Tomorrow, Mark Guggenheim, he's the man, tweets out the first photo of the Justice Society of America headquarters and announces the debut of Stargirl, Citizen Steel, Dr. Midnight, and Obsidian.
Oh my goodness,
dude.
Look at that. Look at that. That looks like it's right out of the 30s, man.
This is so amazing. I'm so excited for this.
Oh, who else right now has a geek boner? Because that is just truly amazing.
Pretty sure everybody that's watching.
Seriously. I mean, I know we're like a clean podcast, but I don't know. This is like, you know, and,
it's too much.
We've been talking. I don't know if you guys remember back on History of Pop X, we were talking about, you know, how Superman was developed back in the day, and then the Justice Society became the first Justice League. So Justice Society was it. And it is the Justice League. It's just a predating precursor to it. And that is so awesome, dude. Dr. Midnight and Obsidian.
Dude,
what?
Oh, my God.
Dude.
We're going to see these heroes live action, man. Could you have ever imagined seeing Justice Society in live action? That's amazing.
I know, man. Look at Dr. Midnight and Obsidian there.
Oh, my gosh.
That's insane.
I can't wait.
When I say look at that, if you're listening to us on the audio version of our podcast, you guys seriously need to check out our YouTube channel over at youtube.com/popxcast because we have an amazing channel over there where all of this, you can actually, while we're doing the broadcast, you can see visuals of what we're doing. I'm not going off on a tangent, but I'm just saying. And speaking of DC Comics, Killer Croc and Harley Quinn. Oh my gosh, are you ready? Are you sitting down? We'll make an appearance on Fox's Gotham, but no timeline has been given as of yet, but it seems to be unlikely that it will be upcoming in this season, but they have predicted that maybe season 4 Gotham, we will finally get to see Harley Quinn and Killer Croc. Mm. I don't know.
I can't contain myself, on
cable TV, Harley Quinn on cable. What?
Come on, man. Who are they going to get to play Harley Quinn, though, man? Who can outdo Margot Robbie? Oh, my goodness.
Oh, man.
The excitement is real, gentlemen. Let's talk more about the CW, man. They have announced that Kevin Smith will be directing an episode of Supergirl Season 2, which will be called Supergirl Lives. The title is a throwback to the script that Smith wrote back in 1996 for the Tim Burton film that never was, called Superman Lives as well, which also would have starred Nicolas Cage as Superman.
Now, have you seen this? There's a documentary. I remember. Holy cow, dude! This takes me back. I remember being in high school. All right, this was my junior year, and back in the day, before you had internet, before you had IGN or superherohype.com or any of the other outlets that we get our news from, you had magazines, and in the magazines they were promoting huge this upcoming Tim Burton film, because Tim Burton done such a great job with the Batman franchise, he was going to try to take a stab at Superman. Kevin Smith wrote this whole script. It was going to be an epic, and there's this whole documentary on why it was turned down. I don't want to say anything. I think it's on Netflix, but you can find it.
Is this John Schnepp, The Death of Superman Lives, correct? Is this the documentary
that's
talking about?
Yes, sir.
I've heard of that. It was the most craziest
suit, because his suit was supposed to be iridescent, not like black and not like red and blue and yellow. It was supposed to be like I don't know, like metallic, glowing LED inside of it. It was the most bizarre thing, but it would have been the coolest looking Superman, I'm sure, that we would have ever had seen. Wow. But we got Lindsay Badger hanging out with us. She's getting ready to do her nerd nuggets. Oh, my gosh.
Oh, my God, it's a nerd nugget.
Go for it, Lindsay Badger.
Hey, guys. I'm Lindsay Badger. You're a Midwestern Okie geek at heart. And here is this week's nerd nugget. There were a combined 1,547 lens flares in the first two Star Trek movies that were directed by J.J. Abrams.
Over 1,500 lens flares?
Yes. Now, I think they're still adding up all the lens flares from the newest movie, and that's why they didn't have the numbers for the third one that just came out. But is that not insane?
Wow.
I do remember this, and I have to say this because Lindsay Badger's Nerd Nugget just kind of brings it back. I remember sitting in the theater watching Star Trek, and we'll say more about Star Trek a little later if you know what I'm saying. But I remember watching it in IMAX here in Orlando, and I was just watching. I was like, why is my eyes hurting so much? It's just too bright. And you got to imagine, this is IMAX. This is an 80 freaking foot screen that's crazy LED technology projection, whatever you want to call it. It's crazy.
Yeah. And literally put lens, you in.
And all these lens flares were like giving me a headache because it was just like, oh.
So many.
It was crazy. It was like, all right.
Did you feel like you were getting your picture taken like the whole movie?
It was too many flashes. Like you
see little dots because of.
You know, I'm pretty sure if I was to go back to that night, I probably couldn't sleep the whole night. I'm sure it probably screwed up my entire sleep cycle.
I would have to say that's a little excessive. Wouldn't you agree?
I have 1,500.
1,500 for two movies.
He got so much flack over this too, and that's why he lightened up on the lens flares during Star Wars. Because he even told the press, he said, "Hey, I didn't add as many because people apparently didn't like him as much as I do." But that's his thing, you know. That's JJ's thing.
Yeah, it's his signature.
Yeah, it's like his.
Anyways, I got a good giggle out of reading that, so I had to share it with you guys.
That's pretty awesome. Great. Well, Badges, thank you so much. You do such an awesome job with getting our nerd nuggets, and so. It's going to be really, 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 really cool to just see what you can come up with for next week's show, which is going to be really cool. Yeah. You know what I'm saying? Oh my God.
I always try to get you something good. All right. Well, until next week, I'm signing off.
No, you're not. I got to ask you a question right quick before you go. All right. Yeah. So how many of us here in this window and over in the chat room as well, we got some people hanging out with us in the chat room. Luke, what's up? Come over and join us at popx.live. So how many of us here have seen Stranger Things?
I've not seen every episode. Not every episode, but I'm almost there.
Okay. Here's why. I'm going to give you a little tidbit. Episode 31 is going to be strictly Stranger Things. Yes. We're going to dive in. We're not only going to, share some plot stuff and some amazing. We're going to give you all the 80s Easter eggs that we find because guess what? Yes. We're a PopX cast. That's what we do. We dig into the geeky stuff that you want. Yes. So if you've not seen Stranger Things,
it's still sitting on your wish list. Get it up to the top and start watching.
It's only 8 episodes.
It's so good. The music, the characters, the storyline, all the little
beautiful
things that just make it authentic.
It's a beautiful, it's really awesome. All right, Lindsay Badger, I'll let you go now.
All right, I'll see you guys after the show. Thank you.
Look at that. Dynamic duo.
Yeah. Have fun.
All right, thanks. All right, so we are going to now go straight on into some pretty cool stuff. I was sitting here one day, and I was thinking about what can we do for a topic that's going to combine some of our favorite films. And I was like, well, lately we're kind of in, especially if you think about the past 10 or 15 years, we're kind of in the reboot era. You know what I'm saying? Because they're recycling a lot of stuff, particularly from the 80s.
But, yes, sir.
You know. Some of it works, some of it doesn't. So this week's topic is going to be the top 10 film franchise reboots that worked. So looking over the past 10 years or more, I would actually stretch this list out to maybe the past 20 years, or as we like to call it, the reboot era, the past 20 years, we found some movies that were not only reboots that worked, but actually profited substantially at the box office. And in reverse order from 10 to 1, we're going to give you the list. And here is PopX Cast's official, quote-unquote, franchise reboots and why they worked with audiences. And I'm going to start us out at number 10, which is probably one of my favorite movies of the franchise, X-Men First Class. And I loved this movie from beginning to end. And I remember seeing this in the theater, and I was truly blown away and, hey, it's got Kevin Bacon in it. I mean, come on. What's not in it? But I digress. But maybe this counts, maybe it doesn't. I know that as a series of prequels and stuff like that, that was always in order and The Last Stand was released. But, you know, we never really knew what was going on. And the way that the X-Men canon for the big screen was just heading after absolutely terrible origins, Wolverine, which is, shall we say, kind of screwed up the entire Deadpool as we know it. And that's when they gave Deadpool, they sewed his mouth up and made him bald. And
you're going to make me cry, Joe.
It was horrific. And, you know, as we say, the aforementioned Last Stand, when they actually killed off Phoenix or Jean or whatever you want to call her, I'd have to say that this reboot in terms of quality is definitely in the top of the list for the X-Men canon films. And the first two films were passable, particularly the second one. It was really good. But otherwise, this is the best of the X-Men movies, I think, in my franchise, in my mind, that kind of rebooted the entire X-Men franchise as we know it, which isn't to say that this film is brilliant or anything. It's not. It's just a basic movie, and you'll be entertained by it. But it starts out beautifully, but really does eat its own tail as it winds up in the final action sequences. It's just kind of, it's predictable. You know what's going to happen. If you've read the comics, you know the ending. You know Charles. If you've not seen the movie, you know Charles Xavier. He becomes paralyzed, and this is how it all is explained. It was a good film on the whole, and I thought that there was a lot of full surprises and nice little touches and nods to some of the previous movies as well. So X-Men First Class is number 10. Austin, what do you got for number 9, my friend?
Yeah, man, First Class is a great film. It's
Isn't it my
second favorite X-Men movie in the entire franchise.
What is your favorite movie? What is your favorite
X-Men? My favorite movie is Days of Future Past, the follow-up to First Class. Yeah. I mean, both of those films to me, man, a great starter, and then it just takes off from there.
Yeah.
So that's a great number 10, dude.
Thanks.
But let's talk about number 9. Actually, you know what? We've already talked about number 9 when we were talking about the lens flares a while ago. This is Star Trek. Star Trek 2009. I'm going to go ahead and get this off the bat. I love this film.
Yes.
Okay, lens flares included. My eyes may have hurt a little bit watching the movie, but this is a great movie. So
yes,
having spent almost a decade getting itself deeper and deeper into trouble, the Star Trek franchise finally croaked with the absolutely dire and derivative drivel that was Nemesis. So far as the TV series go, it took until a second series of Enterprise for mainstream audiences to finally give up on Star Trek. Similar to Batman on the big screen, it looked like it was the end for a film series that promised a fanatical following. But what happens next is one of my favorite Star Trek movies was, again, exactly what Star Trek needed in order to be relevant again. What it needed, of course, was just tearing up the whole idea of Star Trek and starting over again at the very beginning.
Mm-hmm.
It's a good film, okay? And it may not be everybody's favorite movie, okay, because I know there's so many Star Trek films, but it is one of, if not my all-time favorite, old movies included, favorite Star Trek film.
Absolutely.
And it's undeniably one of the most successful franchise reboots ever, having made a lot of money.
Yes.
And you've got to give it credit for winning over people who would have never. I know so many people who have never watched any of the old Star Treks. They like this movie a lot.
Yeah.
And they think it's a great sci-fi movie, not just a Star Trek movie. So I think Star Trek is a very successful film and one of the best reboots ever, in my opinion.
And just to tag on with what you said, we even just a few podcasts ago, we did Star Trek Beyond. We did the official film review.
Yes.
And we had nothing but rave reviews about it because it was a really good film. And I think the whole Abrams legacy has really done an amazing job. Just the Bad Robot film company has done an amazing job. And look at that poster. Isn't that a nice throwback to the
one of my favorite posters of the year.
Yeah. And so that is a throwback to the original 1979 film, Star Trek film, something like that, 79, 78. Lord, all the Trekkies are going to be emailing me this week.
It's not that. What are you saying?
Excuse me. You're wrong, sir.
Excuse me. Live long and prosper. You shall not. But I have to say, though, my favorite Star Trek film of all time is, in fact, Star Trek, the original motion picture.
Yeah, it's a great one, man.
The original V'ger, which we find out is Voyager. That's kind of cool. Nice little touch.
Those are good. Yeah.
Austin, good share, man. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
All right, so we are out number 8 right now. And I want to say this first and foremost. When I was making this list, I wasn't really looking at an internet website. I was going through my actual film archive, and I found a list of reboots that is in the modern era from movies of yesteryear, okay? And I was looking at how much they grossed in the box office versus overall fan interest. And the next movie literally touches on one of my most favorite film franchises of all, and that is Rocky Balboa. And I'm a huge fan of, right? You just want to hear the music. Anyway, I'll save you because I'm, you know, anyway.
Epic.
But I remember so many times that my father would sit down with me, and we actually went to the cinema and watched Rocky III and Rocky IV, and we watched the famous fight with Dolph Lundgren.
What a great experience.
Oh, dude. And I got this. Not only did I get to see Rocky in the theater, I got to see Star Trek and Back to the Future.
Oh, Joe. You were living in the golden ages, man.
Dude, I am. What are you saying, Austin?
Dude, I ain't saying. All right,
you better stop it. You better. All right, let's get back to Rocky. So I'm really going to go for this one. Okay, I'd actually like to go so far as to say that this, along with the first two movies of the franchise, is the best film in the films in the Rocky saga.
Great.
And I think plot wise, there's a lot that you can invest in emotionally with a story about a man in his past. He's past his prime. And he's wanting to turn back to the years, to his days of glory, just for one last hurrah, just to prove to his doubters that they're wrong. And maybe it's just me, but I was really quite upset for Mr. Balboa when that pundit slagged him off on TV, and everybody was just, you know, making fun of him. And this is like, Rocky's a has-been, he's a waste, he's a wash-up. And they were playing that. Remember the video game? And they was like, oh, man, you know, hey, you can beat Rocky. You can do that. But, you know, the relationship between Rocky and his son in this movie is very interesting and very well done. And it's nicely developed. And I love how the dynamic between Rocky and his son, who is now trying to escape the shadow of his father, trying to just make a name for his own self and not the Balboa legacy and franchise. And I just love how the movie just climactically brings father and son together in the union. But as a film in its own right, it's inspirational, it's touching, it's tense, and it's really is a very good ride the whole way through. As a Rocky movie, it's more than a worthy final chapter to any of the timeless sagas of Rocky franchise. And like I said, I remember watching this movie with my father, and he hadn't seen this movie. My dad doesn't typically go to the cinema, you know, like we used to. So, you know, my dad's a little more old school. So when he and I were sitting down one Christmas just a couple years ago, I was like, Dad, have you seen this new Rocky movie? And he's like, there was a new Rocky movie? And I was like, oh. So we sat down. It was Christmas Eve 2014, I think. And I popped this in, and he was just in awe. He was just wow, that's a good movie. And so we actually, it was kind of cool. He introduced me to Rocky, and I introduced him to this film.
Wow.
That's my number eight.
That's awesome, man. Balboa, it really did, man. It revitalized Rocky to the point we're getting the Creed films.
Yes.
We're getting Creed films because Creed. Balboa was such a good movie.
And then Creed films are good.
Creed was great, man. I loved Creed, and his performance in that as Rocky got nominated for an Oscar. That tells you how good he is, man.
And they're making a Creed 2 as well.
Which is one of my most anticipated movies. But
I'm telling you.
Let's move on to number seven now.
Caesar.
One of my favorite, personally, my favorite new series going on right now is the new Planet of the Apes series, man. The original Charlton Heston Planet of the Apes was good. But it was in more of a campy and unintentionally funny rather than – I mean, seriously, the guy chews through enough scenery to power an intergalactic spaceship.
He pretty much did, yeah. He's just like, you know,
hurry, you dang dirty apes.
But I will say this one does – it loses points for a rather boring and although far from offensive plot involving human characters – the way this film handles Caesar, the new film handles Caesar to lead the Apes Rebellion is nothing short of spectacular. These new Planet of the Apes film, I believe if the next film is just as good as the first two, could be one of the greatest trilogies ever, man. Because Rise leads into Dawn, and Dawn of the Planet of the Apes is one of my favorite films.
It was beautiful.
In general, man, it's so beautiful. But I don't think I've ever seen so much, so much humanity portrayed by animals. Mm-hmm. And yes, I thought the CGI for them was pretty daggone good, man. Especially beautiful. In the second movie, man. Andy Serkis does such a phenomenal job.
I was getting ready to say Andy Serkis, man. What
he
a freaking
is motion capture king! What? Everything he does Gollum, with motion
dude.
Capture,
he did Gollum.
Dude, he's Gollum. He was King Kong in the King Kong 2005 movie, man. He does it all, and he's Snoke in Star Wars. Does it all.
He
man.
Does it all, dude.
And because of him, I think Caesar, the new Caesar, is a very iconic character in today's mm-hmm. cinema.
Oh yeah,
and there's a lot more dramatic and emotional weight to Caesar's rise to dominance over the other Planet of the Apes. And even though this plot is kind of like it's similar, you know, to the way that the other movies have handled like the rise of the monkeys and the apes and whatever, I think this film does such a good job at mm-hmm. overcoming some of the cliches that most of these other Planet of the Apes movies have. And we didn't even talk about the Mark Wahlberg film. You remember that movie, Joe?
Yeah. I remember that. Was that Tim Burton, too?
That was a Tim Burton film, in my opinion, one of the low points of Tim Burton's career. I did not like that movie.
It was pretty rough. It was pretty rough. And, you know, when I was thinking of this list, you know, I'm a huge fan. I know I'm going off topic, but we're talking Tim Burton for a second, so yeah. I'm allowed yeah. to do this. I was thinking about Charlie and the Chocolate Factory.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
It didn't really do that good. And no. So, you know, that was another one of, I think, Tim's lower.
Yeah. He struggles with reboots. I mean, the Batman and you know, he was going to do Superman and stuff. But for some reason, him and reboots, they just don't
click. If he would stick with original storylines like Big Fish, Big Fish is a great film. If you've never seen it. Love it.
And his new film coming out, what's the Miss Megorium or something? No, it's like Mr. Oh, it's like his version of the X-Men. I can't remember what it's called, but it looks really good, man. If he can do original stuff, I think that's his forte.
I think you're right.
But yeah, man, back into Planet of the Apes, had this film been entirely about apes, it would have been far less captivating, and audiences wouldn't have had that human emotional component as we witness Caesar rise up. I think James Franco actually did a very good job. This is, in my opinion, one of his better performances.
I couldn't agree more.
Especially playing off of a motion-captured Andy Serkis playing Caesar. I think he nailed it, man. And this is a great setup to what could be a phenomenal series once it's all said and done, man.
It already is. It already is. And about every 3 to 4 years, we get a brand new film.
Yes.
And as long as we have Andy Serkis doing Caesar, I think it will continue to be just as successful as and Luke over in the chat room says hashtag Burton crush. I'm more of an Abrams fan, but if I was going to go with Burton, it'd have to be the retro Burton, like 1989 Batman.
Yeah.
But so anyway, moving on, we're number 6 now. And before I set this one up, I remember. All right, so I'm like 13, 14 years old, going to the video store when you actually would have to rent a VHS tape and not get it on Redbox or Vudu or whatever.
Oh, yeah.
The Fly.
Wow.
One of my most favorite movies of all time. One of my most favorite horror genres of all time.
Yeah.
And it's almost 30 years after its original release, David Cronenberg's The Fly remains one of the most disturbing horror films ever made. And it's a story of an eccentric genius, Seth Brundle, a.k.a. Mr. Jeff Goldblum. Oh, look at that.
He's great.
He's so sexy. He's such a man beast. But he experiments with a teleportation device that ends horribly after he accidentally fuses his genetic makeup with that of a common housefly. Look at that. Oh my gosh. If you're listening to this on the audio version, you're not getting the visual. You need to go to youtube.com/popxcast right now and look at these cool visuals that Mike's
prosthetics were amazing, man.
I know. Amazing. The 80s, dude. I mean, this is one of the most iconic 80s horror genre films.
Yeah.
And the metamorphosis from Jeff into The Fly was just
brilliant. And despite Cronenberg's non-mainstream pedigree, The Fly turned out to be one of the most successful movies of all time in his career. It's far less impressive sequel, The Fly 2. It was released in 1989, not as lackluster, of course, as Jeff Goldblum's version. But yeah. Despite it seemingly its original premise, The Fly was a remake of a much older film. Now, you know, unless you really know much about your movies, you're not going to know. But it was directed by Kurt Newman in 1958 and was based on a short story by George Langelam. And I think I said that, George Langelam. The original Fly was a low-budget B-movie featuring a horror icon, Vincent Price. Mr. Vincent Price in a supporting role. This version of The Fly was relatively successful as well, so it's definitely one of the classic, more iconic B-movies of the era, leading to many sequels, including The Return of the Fly and The Curse of the Fly. There we got the Return of the Fly, and look at that. Man. And there's the – oh, look. Yep.
Oh, my goodness.
Great. Super 8. Look at that, filmed in Super 8.
What a throwback.
Cool.
What a throwback.
So coming in at number 6, ladies and gentlemen, The Fly.
Man, The Fly is such a – and I feel like sometimes it's a forgotten, phenomenal horror film. It's a scary movie.
But you can't forget it is a reboot.
Yes, and a lot of people do not know that it is a reboot.
Exactly.
From a much older movie. I encourage you guys, go back and check out the old Fly movies. Interesting.
Yeah, especially
very
the effects.
Interesting. Oh, yeah. You will love that.
Glorious.
But let's move on to number 5.
Okay.
Now, Ocean's 11.
Mm-hmm.
This particular franchise reboot was so successful in my eyes that I often forget that it belongs on a list like this. It is a reboot.
It is.
And as far as heist movies go, it's no Heat, but everything you watch heist movies for is in Ocean's 11,
mm-hmm.
right?
Yep.
And it all starts with the cast. The cast in this film is incredible. Some of the biggest stars today, Ocean's 11, one of their first films. I mean, mm-hmm. it's incredible that you can get that many talented
Matt
actors.
Matt Damon, Brad Pitt, George Clooney.
I mean, that is A-list after A-list actor and actresses as well. But long-winded and elaborate robbery plans, a seemingly impossible target for the heist itself, a fairly interesting web of relationships between the thieves and their targets, and so on. There's just so much to love about this movie. I mm-hmm. encourage anybody who has not seen Ocean's 11, please go back and watch it. In my eyes, it's a classic because you got so many stars, you got such a good premise, and who doesn't love a good heist film? A good heist film is so much fun. It's not brilliant, right? But you've got really good fun. The original Ocean's 11 in 1960 was cliche, and the Rat Pack of Dean Martin, Frank Sinatra, Sammy Davis Jr., Peter Lawford, Angie Dickinson has very low marks in terms of acting and plot. The reboot, however, breathed new life in a revisited franchise, caused numerous sequels, and Joe, I don't know if you've heard about this, but we're actually getting another Ocean's 11 movie starring all females. But it is not a complete reboot. It is in the same universe as this Ocean's 11. And George Clooney is actually rumored to return.
Get out of here.
So this franchise is still, even after a long period of time, it's still making money, man. And that's how good this first film was.
Yeah, and if you go back and look at the film marks for the original, it's not as lackluster. I mean, it's definitely on the lower end of the spectrum in the percentile range. But if you go and look at Ocean's 11, the newer one, it's pretty up there, and it is so much that it's spawning this whole franchise and has created this whole universe of characters. And it's definitely one of the greatest ones. But that's an awesome number 5, dude. We are at the halfway point. Can you believe it?
Oh, man. Oh, man. We're almost done, baby. Let's keep going.
All right. So, reboots. We're talking reboots. One of the most iconic guys in the ever there that you can reboot, remake, film. Just keeping it in the horror genre. Bram Stoker's Dracula. Holy cow. When I saw this movie for the first time, I was freaked the heck out.
Great movie.
The man bat in the middle of this movie freaked me out. I'm like, what the heck is that? What are you doing? But anyway, Francis Ford Coppola's adaptation of Dracula remains popular due to its lavish production and pretty much unabashed melodrama. Inspired by Bram Stoker's classic horror novel, it features the performances by Mr. Gary Oldman. Oh, my God. Let me stop right there. Gary freaking Oldman as Dracula himself.
Yeah.
And Anthony Hopkins, we talked about him earlier as Odin. Well, he played Van Helsing in this movie, including Winona Ryder and Keanu Reeves as the Victorian newlyweds. And they find themselves in a fight against an immortal blood sucker. I mean, Gary Oldman. Let me just rewind. Gary freaking Oldman. Holy cow. Anyway, to say that Coppola's movie is a remake is almost laughably obvious. I mean, it's obvious. We all know that how many movies out there has the end Dracula on it. You know, Dracula 2000, The Curse of Dracula. There's so many. Yes. And what is it? Abbott and Costello meets Dracula and the Mummy. All them old crazy goofy movies. But, you know, when you search the internet and you type in the word Dracula, you get like over 200 movies within the word, just the key term Dracula alone in the title, not to mention famous plagiarisms like F.W. Marnew's masterful 1922. Now, this is the first ever Dracula movie, Nosferatu. If you've never seen Nosferatu, he's got these long fingers and he creeps and you see the shadow. Oh, it's definitely a great silent film. And it's freaky, freaky. Oh, my God, it's so freaky for its time. And so there's two versions of Dracula that stand above all others. The first one is Todd Browning's 1931 adaptation, which is the iconic actor himself, Bela Lugosi, who performs the famous roles, Children of the Night, what a sweet music they make. Oh, that's I good. Just love that.
That's good, Joe.
His performance was as famous vampire. As it's iconic. It's legendary. Even to this day, it still stands up. Bela Lugosi, holy cow. And the second one is 1958's Hammer Horror version starring Christopher Lee. And Lee was so charismatic as Dracula that he actually reprised his role in several low-budget Dracula sequels. Mm-hmm. And over time, built himself into a career of playing bad guys. Live long and rest in peace, Mr. Christopher Lee. You'll always be a master of the dark side. And a great actor. We lost him a couple years ago in 2014. Yeah. And, man, what a legacy. What a legacy. Absolutely. Yes.
Yeah.
Bram Absolutely. Stoker's Dracula, number four.
Oh, man. We're bringing back so many classics
I'm
here.
I'm telling you, reboots dude.
That are classics.
I know.
Not every reboot is garbage. I don't care what the internet
That's
says.
That's exactly right.
Let's move on to some comic booky stuff. All right. We're talking about 2008's Incredible Hulk. So audiences, since the dawn of CGI, they've been waiting to see what a modern-day Incredible Hulk would look like since his live-action predecessor, Lou Ferrigno, got painted up all green. Lou Ferrigno was an incredible
Hulk. Freaking love
Hulk.
You, Lou.
See what I did there? Incredible Hulk.
Yeah, that was pretty good. This guy.
Like that.
This guy.
Like that. But in 2003, an attempt was made at Hulk that left audiences feeling a tad bit lackluster.
Look at him. Wait, you want to stop? Look at it. Look how bubbly he looks.
It's like PlayStation 2. Seriously.
He looks like a bub. Did you just say PlayStation 2?
Straight out of a PlayStation 2 video game. Seriously.
Oh, my God. It's like a head. It's like a head with bubbles. What the heck?
Didn't he grow bigger as the movie went on? The more he got shot, the bigger he got. I'm pretty sure that's how he worked. But thankfully, in 2008, we got Edward Norton, who reprised his role in the Hulk in this new franchise reboot that totally abandons the first 2003 attempt. In fact, the Marvel Cinematic Universe claims that this film is now actually a part of the ongoing cinematic universe of films, as it includes Robert Downey Jr. playing Tony Stark in the end credits scene in this film. Mm-hmm. And also, I believe the guy who plays Thunderbolt is actually in Civil War, correct?
You are correct. The guy who plays Thunderbolt Ross is in Civil War. So it is continuing, even though Edward Norton didn't reprise his role as Bruce Banner. We do have continuing actors from this particular – and actually, here's another little nerd nugget for you. This film, if you watch Daredevil Season 1, in the reporter's office, you see the attack of Manhattan, and you see the attack of Hell's Kitchen and all that in the background. That's in reference to the massive fight that took place between Hulk and Abomination. So there's a little
that's amazing.
So Marvel, not only do they recognize Netflix as part of the MCU, but they also recognize this film as obviously with Civil War as Thunderbolt Ross. My question is, after this movie, will we see Thunderbolt Ross as the Red Hulk?
Dude, see, that's when he was announced to be in Civil War, a lot of people were like, ooh, Red Hulk. I'm like, not this early, okay?
Give
it some time. Yeah. Bring him back. Let his character marinate. Maybe later on, man, we get a Hulk versus Red Hulk. How cool would that be?
Maybe Thor Ragnarok with Planet of the Hulks.
Oh, dude, I can't.
They haven't said anything. We don't know anything. Isn't it so awesome? Isn't it so awesome to speculate?
What a good time we're living in, man.
Dude,
but finally, with this movie, fans got the Hulk that we can finally be proud of. Big Green was reborn, and we've came a long way to what Hulk looks like today in the Marvel films. Guys, I think the Hulk in the Marvel films now looks perfect.
He's great.
Perfection,
that's
man.
The Hulk you want.
Yes, sir. And we got that because of the Incredible Hulk. What a good reboot, man.
Just a really cool tie-in. Lou Ferrigno actually voices the Hulk.
I love that.
He does all the grunts and the
I love that.
So it's really cool.
They keep bringing him back. That's so awesome, man.
Of course. Well, he is the original Hulk. Another nerd fact for you before we move on. Lou Ferrigno is the only human to ever portray the Incredible Hulk in a human form, non-CGI.
And he'll probably be the last one, too.
He will be the last one because there's nobody that can be 8 foot tall. Anyway, number two, as we're rounding out the end of this amazing list of top 10 franchise reboots that worked, is Casino Royale. And, you know, I'm not a huge fan of James Bond, but I have to say, this one was pretty freaking awesome. Yeah. And I'll say it straight. I'm not a Bond fan, by no means. It's not my thing. I watched GoldenEye as a kid. I played GoldenEye, the video game on the N64. And, you know, I remember Die Another Day. I remember those kind of movies when I was a kid. And I was just kind of thinking, you know, these are decent. They're okay. Pierce Brosnan there. But I just couldn't be less interested in the franchise in general. And that was until Casino Royale. Whereas before, I just never found the suave, effortless, prone to good eponymous protagonists interesting, or the outlandish scenarios he would find himself in, getting almost out of everything, or his constant ability to have hot women just falling at his knees. This film changed everything. All right. Yeah. So, you know, you go back to the Sean Connery roles and all those old classic Bonds, and the women are just falling and is shaking, not scared, money, money. But, you know, Bond himself in this movie was portrayed as a very flawed individual. He was a flawed 00 agent. Mm-hmm. Reckless, and it was only out for himself, his own personal gain. And this also kind of brought in some much needed, to me anyway, realism into the equation. And when I say that, if you've seen Casino Royale, hashtag spoiler alert, if you've watched the rope torture scene, and if you've seen it, you just can't forget it afterwards. It's one of those most iconic scenes that it is explicit. I will say that much. And it's just a shame that the following movie that was in this franchise, Quantum of Solace, it was a horrible turd. It was a horrible, horrible movie. But Casino Royale for me, even though when you think of James Bond, you can't really say, well, that's a reboot. James Bond is almost like Doctor Who. You know, he kind of, I don't want to say he regenerates, but the 00 agent continues in this secret service society of British. But Casino Royale pretty much put Bond back on the map, I'd have to say.
Dude, absolutely, man. Casino Royale is my favorite, and I can definitively say this, my favorite Bond film. Because
Dude,
I'm not a big Bond fan, and I never was until Daniel Craig, man, and he made me really, really dig that character.
Yeah.
So what a What a great number two.
Daniel Craig is
oh,
awesome.
Oh, man, what a great number two.
All right.
He's the
Austin,
man.
You get the privilege of introducing number one, and I'll come in later and banter about it. Go for it, baby.
Okay.
Are you ready, ladies and gentlemen? This is number one on the list.
Guys, what better than to have a number one? It's got to be Batman. It has to be Batman. But which Batman are we talking about? Batman Begins. This is, without a shadow of a doubt, our favorite film on the list. This, to us, is what all franchise reboots aspire to be. That is, namely, not only a worthy addition to a rusty and outdated film franchise, but one that completely revitalizes commercial and public interest in it by delivering a film that is arguably better than any other that came before it.
Mm-hmm.
Guys, I'm a huge fan. And to me, Batman Begins is slightly overrated because it's overshadowed by The Dark Knight. But mm-hmm. go back and watch the first film in that trilogy.
Glorious.
I really encourage you guys. It is such a good origin story for Batman. I seriously don't think I've ever left a cinema with a more satisfied feeling than after I saw this film. And Joe, I know you can absolutely relate to that.
Oh, I will be here in a minute. I'll be sharing some stuff.
Buddy, after the godless Adam West throwback dirge that was Batman and Robin, one of my least favorite movies ever created. What a turd that was. Jeez. This was everything I wanted from another Batman movie and more. It's dark. It's gritty. Bruce Wayne is a freaking hoss cat. And the scene where he gets out of bed. This is the scene that I remember most. He gets out of bed, starts doing push-ups, man. He does like 50 while Alfred's talking to him. He's like, hello, Bruce Wayne, what you doing? He's like doing push-ups. I'm like, oh my God, that's Bruce Wayne. I'm sorry, I'm probably waking my roommate up. But listen, this movie.
He wakes up and he does 50 push-ups, man. That's crazy.
This is the Bruce Wayne, man, that we wanted to see. Christian Bale kills it. I'm going to shut up. Joe, man, what do you think about this? Do you like it as much as I do?
Oh, man. You know, like you said, it did lead to some amazing predecessor movies in the Christopher Nolan trilogy. Took Tim Burton when he – all right, so this whole dark Batman thing started in 1986 with The Dark Knight Returns, with a graphic novel that Frank Miller wrote, and so this whole dark Batman was spawned from that 1986 graphic novel series. Now, fast forward 3 years later, Tim Burton starts reading this and he likes it, and he's like, "Oh my gosh, you know, instead of this cheesy, campy Batman." Or the version that DC's portraying, you know, with the blue hood and the gray chest, this is a rugged individual who has seriously got some issues, and he's flawed, and he is the Bat. And I think in that, The Darkness was born, and Tim Burton revitalized him in 1989. So it's kind of a reboot of a reboot of a reboot, if you think about it.
Yeah.
But I think, honestly, when I was in the film watching this movie for the first time, sitting in the cinema, I needed a moment where I had to pick my jaw up off the floor. I'm like, when I saw the Tumbler Batmobile,
oh, man, that first scene.
What the heck was that? That was the most coolest thing on four wheels I've ever seen, or five wheels, or whatever it is. Freaking awesome. And Morgan Freeman, come on.
Oh, Morgan Freeman.
My name is Morgan. Anyway, so we can do that all day. But, you know, Batman Begins is such a great origin story on how he got started into the martial arts with, you know, it just – I don't want to – most people have seen the movie by now, and you know about the League of Shadows, and you know about all of that and how he was trained. This movie dives into all of that. And I was just, like, in awe because none of us really knew how Batman became such a fighter. We never knew where the instinct, where the drive. We knew that when his parents died, he wanted to get back with vengeance. But this movie just totally takes that and just steers in a total different direction with the League of Shadows. And it was just amazingly done. I can't brag about it enough. It was a great film.
Joe, I love that you put this one on the list, you know, because a lot of people might say, well, why didn't you put, you know, Tim Burton's Batman? But here's the thing. Batman was not at its lowest low. When Tim Burton's Batman came out, all right? After Batman and Robin, it was done for, man.
Well, that's when Joel Schumacher took over. He started adding more campiness to it.
Yes.
And it became more of about glitz and glamour and neon glows
selling
and
toys.
Flair. Yes. Mind you, Jim Carrey's
Jim Carrey's Riddler is by far the best Riddler I've ever seen on cinema.
Jim Carrey in a Christopher Nolan Batman movie now, more dark and gritty. How cool would that be, man?
Chris Farrell over in the chat room from the Gunna Geek Network says the bat nipples killed Batman. I agree.
Amen, brother.
I wasn't a fan of Val Kilmer. I wasn't a fan of George Clooney playing it.
No.
Batman for me will always forever be Michael Keaton. Now, despite that, I got to say Christian Bale is right there, right beside
him. Christian Bale is, and I completely get that, man. Michael Keaton was phenomenal.
Yeah.
But to me, you know, and to most of the people that grow up today, Batman Begins revitalized this franchise.
I couldn't agree
and
more.
And it saved Batman. What a number one.
They've actually took Frank Miller's novel, graphic novel, and adapted it into Batman versus Superman and then the upcoming Dawn of Justice. Now, we actually have the Batman suit from the graphic novel. That wasn't just imagined up by Zack Snyder. That was actually came from Frank Miller's graphic novel. So if you go back and look, that fight scene with him in the metal suit, that was drawn over 20 years ago, ladies and gentlemen.
So, Dark Knight Returns.
Wait a minute, 1986, 30 years ago. Was that right? Yeah, 30. Oh, my God. All right, so as we wrap up today's show, we're going to give you some honorable mentions, okay? Of course, this list, I had some others on the list, and I kind of had to pick and choose which ones we're going to talk about. Of course, on this list is True Grit, which is a remake of the original version.
Great.
It's featuring John Wayne. And also Scarface is a remake that when Al Pacino took hold of it, made it in. But Scarface was filmed in the 30s, dude. And also, and one of my favorites, that's along the genre of The Fly, John Carpenter's timeless The Thing. Yeah.
Yes.
I mean, what a movie. The Thing freaked people out.
Still does.
And an era before CGI when latex and Hollywood makeup and props and animatronics, this movie blew it out of the park. It made you not want to go outside on a snowy night. Let me just say that.
Revolutionary, man.
It was
revolutionary.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Well, that's it, man. That's our top 10 reboots. That was great, right?
Great list, man. What a good list.
That was fun, dude. And hopefully somewhere down the road we'll do the top 10 reboots that just totally sucked.
Oh, we will.
I don't know.
Give us a couple years to find all the crap that's came out in the last couple
years. Well, it's probably not too Ghostbusters, Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtle. Anyway, moving along. So you heard us right, folks. PopX now, we do have a hotline. So if you guys are diving into the theaters or you're hearing this list and you want to add something, you want to add a movie that we forgot, pick up the phone, leave us a voicemail, call us. It's 850-417-7679, or it's 850-417-POPX.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yes, sir. We have a hotline, man. How cool is that?
That's pretty cool. Oh, look at that. Look. Yes. To the bat phone.
This is why you guys need to watch the YouTube channel, because what Mike does, it's incredible.
Mike, your gifts are on point, my friend.
We are also part of an amazing network called the Gunna Geek Network. For all things even more geeky, please, guys, head over to GunnaGeek.com and check out some other amazing podcasts on our home network. They are all awesome.
Yes, they are. And also be sure to follow us on social media at Facebook, Instagram, Tumblr, Patreon, Twitter, Pinterest, all at PopXCast. You can also email us at PopXCast@gmail.com, and we'd love to hear from all of our amazing faithful listeners who like to give us 5-star reviews over on iTunes. Also, for future or past shows, you can also check out our official website at PopXCast.com. And I do want to say, before we announce next week's show, I want to say a big hats off. My name is Joe Burke at Rodcav, ROTCAV, and this is...
Oh, I'm Austin. Hi. guys, please do me a favor. Follow me on Twitter and Instagram at The Burkinator. But if you haven't checked out my YouTube channel, I do movie reviews and movie reactions. I'm kind of getting it off the ground right now. But it's really my passion, and it's kind of what I want to go into as soon as I graduate college. So do me a favor. Go over there. Check it out. If you enjoy movie reviews, anything like that, I'm on YouTube as well as PopX.
Awesome. And, sir, we want to give a big thank you to Miss Lindsay Badger for coming in, holding down the chat, posting our images, giving some link love, giving us some nerd nuggets. Lindsay Badger's a huge part of the Team PopX. And also Mr. Mike Ippolito. He told me before the show he had over 94 images. Mike Ippolito, thank you, my friend. You are a rock star. Oh
my
what? God. Stan Lee? Really?
He's playing peekaboo.
Stan Lee's playing peepy. Oh, my God. I'm done after that. All right. Before we close and we wrap up, we want to give you some information about next week's show. Okay? This is really important. So episode 29 will be broadcasting live from the comic book shop here in Winter Garden, Florida, Crumbs World Comics and Collectibles. And we will not be broadcasting on Sunday, rather on Saturday. So we'll be broadcasting live Saturday from 2 to 4 at Crumbs World. And the Crumbs World is doing this awesome dedication day where they're going to be having cosplayers come in. They're going to be doing some promotional giveaways. They're going to be having refreshments and cookies and all kinds of cool stuff. And awesome. I think if you come in on this particular day, they're going to give you a double stamp on your Crumbs World card. So redeem that and you get $10 off if you get up enough stamps. So it's really cool. So come in and meet Team PopX. Myself and Mike Ippolito over here in the side room and my lovely wife, Miss Alex Burke, will be joining us live at Crumbs World. And hopefully Austin will be able to be there. I know Lindsay said she's going to try to be there. So that's really awesome. I want to thank everybody over in the chat room, Luke, Chris, Lindsay, everybody at PopX.live, and you guys are totally awesome. We will see you next week right here on PopX Cast. Love ya!
From everyone here at PopX Cast, thank you so much for listening. Be sure to give us a 5-star rating on iTunes, and don't forget to subscribe for more great content. Follow us on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, Lab, and YouTube, all at PopX Cast. Get your geek on.